Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Adrian Hannes is professor of anthropology and director of the Archaeology Laboratory at Augustana University. He leads the archaeology research at the Mitchell Prehistoric Indian Village, and he is there now. He joins us on the phone from Mitchell. Adrian Hannes, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lori.
Friends from England there for the annual trip, 14th consecutive year. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's it's certainly turning out to be another very, very pleasant round this year, and we are finding some very interesting new things. It seems like after so many years of excavation that you would suspect that maybe you wouldn't be coming up with too many new items, but the site never disappoints us in that sense, so...
Give us an idea of what kind of work is going on this year and what you're finding.
Well, it turns out that for those not familiar with the Archaeodome, we have about a 14,000 square foot area that we're going down, and the deposits we know from tests that we did when the building was being created, the cultural deposits go down about 12 continuous feet. So in our deepest areas of excavation that we've accomplished in the last 14 years, we're probably down about 3.5 or 4 feet, and there's still a whole zone of floor area that we haven't even begun to open yet. So this year, one of the areas that we are opening for the first time is one that should take us down on the very edge of one of the prehistoric lodges, because actually when we built the building, we tried to set it up so instead of excavating the prehistoric houses, we would be excavating an area that would have been an outdoor area between the houses, because that's something that had never been archaeologically investigated up here in the northern plains. So, but we do have the edge of 4 lodges, and one of them, it appears, the edge of the lodge that we're exposing shows that there was a fire in the lodge, and so there are... We've already recovered some cracked tools that were burned in the fire. And so it should be interesting as we further, you know, go down in this particular section of the excavation area, because it'll anything that got caught in a fire would be tools that would have probably been in use at the time that the structure burned. So that'll give a lot of what we find are, you know, throwaways of trash after the people conducted their butchering or when tools broke and so on. But in this area, we probably will be recovering some actual pieces that were, you know, left kind of in place because of the fire having occurred. So
tell me, is that something you can tell visually when you discover something that this is, or does testing have to be done to say there was a fire?
No, actually, it's very visual, because when you get any kind of intense heat, it severely alters the soil. Colors shift to oranges and reds because the iron minerals in the soils are brought to the surface. So there's a intense area of charcoal, and then under that, it shows that it was a pretty hot fire, actually, because it's quite reddened. So, yeah, it is visual. And, of course, some of the tools that we've recovered so far are ground stone tools, like the grooved mauls or the hammers that the people used, and some grinding stones that they would have used to grind some of their grains and so on. And those tools have been cracked by the fire. You can tell that they were broken in an intense fire situation. So, yeah, it is very visual. Some of the charcoal we may submit to get some additional radiocarbon dates, because we continue to try to get, as you know, a suite of dates at any archaeological site. One single date doesn't, you know, I mean, there's a certain degree of statistical discrepancy in each one of these radiocarbon dates, and so the more dates you can submit for analysis, the tighter your dating becomes in understanding the period that the village was occupied.
Do we have a sense of what can cause a fire like this at that time, or is that door wide open?
no, I mean, it's what happens, these lodges, which were about 20 by 40 feet, So they were a rectangular house structure. And those that we have examined at the site so far indicate that there was at least a central fire hearth in the lodge. And what we also know about these lodges from experience in the historic period, over the years that they were occupied, the timber in them, as well as the walls, which are made out of mud mixed with grass, and the roofs would have been timbered but also probably sod-covered. When these lodges stand for a period of time, they become just tinder dry inside. So it really doesn't take, I think, that much of a circumstance to possibly, you know, have ignited something. And, of course, if a lodge started to burn, you know, it would be unlikely that they would have been able to do much to put out the fire. There was an experiment that was conducted up in North Dakota about 20 years ago. There were some replica lodges built up there near one of the prehistoric villages, and then those lodges, you know, over time started decaying. So a group of us went up, and actually one of the lodges that was collapsing, we actually lit it on fire to see how quickly it would burn, and also they're now doing archaeological excavations of that fire just to, you know, determine how things break down over the years. But that lodge went up in a matter of minutes. I mean, really? it was an absolute inferno, so it would have been something that, you know, it would have been a pretty, if something started burning, it would have probably just been nothing they could do about it but allow it to burn.
What else are you hopeful about? Are you on the path of this year, or what have you already discovered this year that excites you?
Well, I mean, one of the things we found were some sherds of ceramic that have some very distinctive Mississippian patterns embossed on them. And we keep arguing that this site was a village that the residents of were probably people that made their way west from some of the big villages over on the Mississippi River. And that seems to be continued to be supported and sustained by the fact that we're finding some ceramics here that reflect those Mississippian origins, as well as ceramics that begin to become what we in the archaeological community call the initial Middle Missouri tradition, or as peoples moved westward carrying their seed stock with them and so on, from moving from river system to river system, they of course encountered other people. And so you get kind of, coming out here onto the grasslands, you get kind of an amalgam of people that were probably both from the east and some coming up from the south. So there are a whole new set of prehistoric ceramic designs and so on that appear. And Mitchell is one of the sites that is one of the really most notable sites for some of the initial Middle Missouri period, you know, ceramics emerging. But at the same time, it's a situation where there are certain levels of Mississippian ceramics here that tell us that there is some kind of contact probably going on back to a big site like Cahokia that was located around what is contemporary St. Louis. That was probably one of the largest metropolitan sites in the prehistoric, you know, sites in North America, at about the same time that this site came to be occupied. So we think, again, that urban center near St. Louis probably boasted 40 to 50,000 people, and gradually some of the people moved, you know, various directions away from that center, carrying with them some of the maize and squash and beans and sunflower and other domesticates that were being grown in the gardens along the Mississippi, and then brought them westward and came out here onto the, you know, onto the grasslands and started establishing these new villages. And so Mitchell represents one of those, you know, villages that dates to about somewhere around 1,000 to 1,100 years A.D.
Mm. Those numbers, when you talk 48,000 to 50,000 people, that still astonishes me for the time that we're talking about. I still have a hard time getting my mind around what was in some ways.
Yeah. Well, but we think, I mean, the demographers that are doing research on human populations in the New World before the Europeans appear have settled on some numbers that would probably surprise you. At the time, just to take a period that people are familiar with, at the time of the original contact through, let's say, Christopher Columbus's voyages around A.D. 1450, it's calculated that there were a population of about 100 million people in the New World, stretching from the Arctic down to the tip of South America, and probably about 65% of those people lived south of the Rio Grande, so down into Meso and Central and South America. But then if you take a date 300 years more recently, around 1750, after European contact has really, you know, been established, the diseases probably reduced the human population in the New World by about 90%, meaning about 10 million people. So these were not empty landscapes. That's one of the kind of myths that we keep trying to work at as archaeologists, anthropologists, of overturning. In other words, the New World was really quite significantly populated. And these river drainages, for instance,
Adrian, we're going to run out of time, but I'm going to invite you back to tell us more about this. Such fascinating stuff. Adrian Hannes at the Mitchell Indian Prehistoric Village. Stick around for hour two.